Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation with a Parasite Investigations team. Parasite Investigations' mission is to apply evidence-based research and experimentations, both traditional and high-tech, to their investigations. So whether it's a private client or a notoriously haunted location, their approach is the same, and that is with the highest level of integrity and respect. I'm Carol Hughes in for Tony Bruschi, and today on this episode of The Grave Talks, a conversation with Jenny and Anthony from Parasite Investigations. Thank you both for being here today. I really appreciate this. And Anthony, I'm going to start with you today.
Sure.
I would like to get a little bit of the background of Parasite Investigations, where you're at, how you came about forming the team. If you could give me the backstory.
About 2 years back, or a little bit less than 2 years back, I was at an investigation at White Hill Mansion in New Jersey. This was hosted by a big investigation company and everything. There were a lot of people there. And I was all excited to go because it had been a while since I'd investigated, and I had just recently put together my own little SLS camera. So I was all excited to use it. And we go through the group investigations, and then it comes time for free roam. And, you know, things are happening here and there. And then towards the end of the night, there's this gentleman in the foyer. He's on the floor, like rolling around and complaining about something. Now, when I saw that, I mean, immediately in my mind, I didn't think paranormal. I was thinking maybe more psychological issues. And then everyone's helping them. We're trying to figure out what's going on. I turn on my SLS camera and I don't see anything initially. And then I get on the steps to the foyer where I'm about 4 or 5 feet off the ground and about 10 feet back. And I still see the gentleman on the floor. And if you've ever been to White Hill Mansion, the ceilings are about, I'd say 10 or 12 feet high. I pull back the SLS camera and there's this gigantic figure on the SLS straddling this gentleman while he's on the ground complaining. And the strange thing is that if you have ever been to White Hill Mansion, on that wall, there's nothing there. There's no molding, there's no fixtures, there's no clocks or anything like that that you would think would cause the SLS to map out a human figure. And there it was, standing on his shoulders, just standing over him.
Terrifying?
I'm sorry?
Were you terrified, or was this kind of an exhilarating moment?
Well, for me, it was more exhilarating just because it's hard for me to kind of get terrified in an investigation, as it's just more like, wow, what is that? You know, and then it just makes me want to ask more questions instead of turn around and run away. Mm-hmm. And then fast forward a couple of days later, I post the video on the hosting company's group page on Facebook. Frankie, our other teammate, reaches out to me and he says, "Hey, I'm doing a podcast on my experience at White Hill Mansion. Do you mind if I use your footage?" And I say, "Yeah, no problem. Just give me some credit. And that's perfectly all right." From there, he tells me, "I'm thinking about starting a team." Mind you, I'd never met this guy during the investigation, you know? So I'm like, yeah, sure, let's start up a team. Why not? And, you know, lo and behold, that became Parasite Investigations. And that was Halloween night what was that, 2021.
Of all nights for that to happen, it happened on Halloween.
Yeah, you know, you know what they say about Halloween investigations. Supposedly, that just lends more to the thinning of the veil and more things are usually happening.
Now, Jenny, how did you end up getting involved?
So I had been investigating for a very long time, probably about 20 years. And more recently, I'd been investigating with a good friend of mine. Her name is Stacy. She and I had been visiting a lot of locations, whether it be Gettysburg or places in New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, near where we live. She saw an announcement somewhere on Facebook, I believe, some type of thing, and something about it caught her eye. And I think it was that it was someone from Rutgers, because Frankie is a forensic psychologist at Rutgers University, where I attended and Stacy also attended. So we saw the Rutgers connection, and we both had been looking for a group for quite some time, but nobody really matched up with our thinking or our ideals. You know, we always left a little bit disappointed. So we said, you know, let's give this a try. And I wrote to Frankie right away, and the rest, and literally the rest is history, as they say. I mean, it was really an instant connection between Anthony and Frankie and myself. And here we are today. It feels like I said earlier to Anthony, I was thinking about how long it had been since we'd been together, but it feels like 10 years. It feels like 20 years sometimes. I feel like I've known them my whole life.
In the best way possible.
I joke that they're my little brothers almost, you know, and that's how I feel, really, which is, I think we've all had that experience in life when we meet someone and feel like we know them right away. So I've been lucky, very, very lucky to come upon them.
Anthony, what's your approach with the team approach to an investigation? What are you looking for in the individuals on the team? Because I know that your background's law enforcement. Jenny, right, is, she's more of a science background. So it's
right,
kind of
right,
like you're looking for a balance of people and opinions.
Yeah, we try to look for a balance, but we also, we try to look for, I mean, this is going to sound like a very generic answer, but we look for quality investigators in a sense that people who can bring something new to the table. We, you know, Frankie, Jenny, and I, we come from different backgrounds. We might have slightly different approaches to things, but we can all come together and come up with a universal approach for our team. I know that when we do look for people, it's almost like forming a band, you know, where you want to get quality people, but you also want to make sure that their personalities work well with yours, and they take a similar approach towards maintaining integrity and respect and trusting each other and having some sort of natural inquisitiveness.
The first thing I said to Frankie is, I hope you don't mind, but I'm kind of a non-believer. Like I'm a really big skeptic. And what I loved about Frankie's answer was, he's like, that's wonderful. We want that. You know, we're looking for that. So it was really the first time that somebody welcomed that philosophy, that maybe we ought to think about it and look at it different ways first before we call it paranormal. And so that was a happy moment for me that I was welcomed as a skeptic on the team.
And Jenny, as a skeptic, and maybe you're not quite as skeptical anymore, I'm not sure.
They tell me that a lot.
but as a skeptic, what was your interest in the paranormal then? Because you wouldn't have exactly believed things were happening. You were out to, I guess, debunk things. What was it that drew you into even being interested in investigating?
I got drawn in more as someone who wanted to show you that you didn't need to be afraid of things that maybe you didn't understand, that looked different to you than anything you had seen before, especially on private investigations. I mean, one of the things we tried to do is take away some of the fear. When I was younger, that's really how I got interested in this. I had lots of friends who said, oh, look at that thing. It's moving by itself. I'm so scared. Or there's, you know, even when I was very young, like there's a monster under my bed young. And I would always be the one to be like, no, there isn't. Let me look. I'll show you, you know, kind of thing. So I guess I always wanted to take the fear out of paranormal investigation. And I think being skeptical does that because it makes you think as well as feel.
So after that, now that you've done investigations, are you less skeptical? Do you feel like there is something out there that's paranormal and can't be explained by science?
I have definitely seen things that I cannot explain by science. Absolutely, yes. Answer is yes. I don't think I'm less skeptical in my approach. And by the way, we have a name for our approach. We actually call it science and sensitivity because we try to combine that. I mean, the friend I mentioned, Stacy, she's really more of a medium, of complete believer, and someone who really has sensitivity and almost psychic abilities at times. You know, I respect that and she respects me. And I think you get better results when you work that way.
I heard Anthony laughing during that question about you believing now.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. We've had some adventures, of course. I mean, part of this, of course, as a paranormal investigator, is to have some adventures.
When you go out to investigate, what is your approach to it? What do you take with you? How do you think about it? Do you investigate the property you're going to? Do you want to know the background of the home or the facility or wherever you're going? Do you like to know the backstory, or would you rather just go in not knowing anything about it? I'll let Anthony start. Excuse me.
Okay. I think we have a tendency to sort of, I know with me, I go back and forth with different approaches on that. I do like to have some information. I don't like to have all of the information. But then at the same time, when I go to a place and I have very little information, then I'm always kind of cursing at myself, saying, "Oh, you know what? I should have looked more into this." So I kind of go both ways with it. But I do think that we need to have some kind of background, maybe not all the fine details, but enough to know about the location, certain spaces in the location, and things like that.
Do you think part of your wanting to have a little bit more information comes from your background in law enforcement?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think my background definitely makes me, you know, it definitely gives me that investigative mindset. Yeah, it helps to definitely put the pieces together. But at the same time, when you have too many puzzle pieces in this situation, it ends up sort of swaying your opinions on your findings a lot, you know? So I try to find a happy medium of knowing and not knowing.
Jenny, what do you think? Do you like to know where you're going into, or do you kind of like to go in not really knowing a lot?
I actually am, I guess, the quote team historian. So I do like to know the background. And one of the things I love about this is being able to have the privilege of being in these amazing buildings, these incredible historic buildings. I've done some in Europe that were much older, but you know, we do have some here from the 1700s that we've investigated that are just absolutely fascinating. I like to just put myself in the place of people who lived in that time. And I do like to know. I do like to know all of it. But I do also understand what Anthony's saying. You really need to be careful. If you know the names of people who live there, you know, then you might hear that name, you know, instead of just saying, what did you hear on that recording? You want to be careful not to get led by that information.
Now, you investigate in primarily New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania. I don't know. I'm assuming there are some investigations you've done that really stand out that were quite amazing. Talk about a place that was really fascinating that you investigated with the team.
I think before I go on the team self-promotion, one of my favorite places is actually the 76 house in Tappan, New York. And it's actually a pub or a tavern, rather. That's probably I think it's advertised as the oldest tavern in America. It goes back to our country's roots. George Washington had worked out of there. Alexander Hamilton had actually lived in the building for a couple of years. And when we go there to investigate, we're only there for maybe 3 hours, 4 hours at most. And we always end up getting what feels like maybe 6 to 8 hours worth of activity, of things happening. It's a really interesting and fascinating place.
Where did you say that was again?
That's the 76 house in Tappan, New York. It's just outside of it's just outside of New York City.
Because now I want to go there too.
Oh, it's an amazing place. And it's when we go there to investigate, we'll usually show up early. We'll have dinner there and everything. The food's amazing. The host is a great guy who will talk your ear off in the best way possible. But just looking at the place and looking at the history, I mean, you step into that place and you immediately know that it is not a new building. You know, there's just a vibe there where you can feel history. You can, even though the place is totally empty, you can feel like there are still people there that aren't on your team, you know?
Jenny, what about you? Do you have any place that really stands out that you investigated?
I think Anthony knows what I'm going to say here. I had on my bucket list to go to Kreischer Mansion in Staten Island, New York for so long. And we finally had the opportunity to do that last March, almost a year ago. And it was by far my favorite investigation. I don't know if you're familiar with Kreischer Mansion.
I'm not. So if you could kind of fill us in a little bit about that.
Sure. Kreischer Mansion is actually, it's a Victorian mansion. It was built in the late 1800s by Balthasar Kreischer, a German immigrant. And he built two actually identical mansions for his sons. And it was actually called Kreischerville at the time. I mean, they were really prominent there in that area and quite wealthy. But this, what I love about this mansion is there was a lot of tragedy. There was a suicide. There was a fire. One of the mansions burned down. So we have a lot of that type of typical old, you know, history, the history of a place we investigate. However, there was also a recent murder at the location, a mob hit, actually. Robert McKelvey was murdered there, stabbed and drowned, unfortunately. Sorry, that's a bit graphic, but that's what happened to him. And so I love the layers, and we call it paranormal lasagna. We love the layers of activity in a place like that. To me, that's absolutely fascinating to have both the modern in the 2000s activity and also, you know, back in the 1800s. So that's very interesting to me.
As a team, do you get calls from people concerned that their home is haunted and they want you to come check it out for them? Or is it more, do you find the locations you're interested in and go investigate? Or do you do a little of both?
I would say we do both. The first investigation that we went on actually as a team, other than that White Hill one where Anthony and Frankie were both there, was a private investigation. And that's where we really got to know each other, investigating that home a few times.
Did you find anything at the home?
At that home, no. And that's a good thing, I think. There had been a lot of activity that we determined was really more linked to the person who lived there rather than the home itself. But there was a lot of debunking involved, a lot. I mean, this home was on the water, you know, that contributes to noises, that type of thing, voices carry, that type of thing. So it was really a good chance to cut our teeth, you know, as a team.
The place also had like this weird architectural layout where it was like, it was built as a house. And then one of the previous owners just kept adding things to it, like random, like a random trap door in the floor. There was something else that I couldn't remember, but like the walls just didn't line up right. It was a really, it was a really strange setup that would probably be able to account for like certain noises and certain feelings that you would get in there.
Right. So it was a classic debunking scenario. But as a new team, I think that was really good for us.
What about maybe somebody has called you and asked you to come out and you did pick up on activity? How do you have that conversation with them? Do people find that information to be validating, or are they more terrified to live there? Does it depend on the person?
I think for me, I would say that we need to be honest. You know, we need to be absolutely honest. We did go somewhere where we had hoped to find nothing because it was a tragic situation and we really hoped to find nothing. And at the last minute, Anthony, I'm still mad at him for this. No, I'm kidding. At the last minute, Anthony came up with an EVP that was just really undeniable. And, you know, we thought, now what do we do? There was really nothing else, but we had to, you know, we had to explain it. And I'll tell you what really helps is having a therapist on your team. I mean, we have a built-in psychologist and therapist on our team. So, you know, Frankie is really able to speak to people in the way that's sensitive and, you know, the right way to talk to someone who's grieving.
I think that's very necessary because if you are delivering information to someone like Anthony, what was on the EVP? I have to know.
So without trying to give up too many details, because it was a private investigation, the client was discussing with Frankie the amount of time that had passed when someone actually close to her had passed away. I think she was saying something about, yeah, it's been about a year. And then right after she says a year, you just hear a very clear, in a whispering voice, just go, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. A male voice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that gave me goosebumps.
Right. And it's not a long EVP, but it was a confirmation. And
right. It had context, you know, mm-hmm. It wasn't, if you just heard like an EVP that just sounds just like that without anything else surrounding it, then you might be able to chalk it up to maybe just something anomalous and not necessarily paranormal. But the fact that it coincided with a statement about that tragedy, it kind of gives it a little bit more credibility.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. And we had been, you know, we had hoped to soothe, you know, a grieving woman, but we also had a responsibility, I think, as investigators to tell her what we found.
Do you find locations that you're interested in, like the place that you mentioned, Jenny, and do you tend to go do more of those type investigations, or do you do more private going into people's homes investigations, or a nice combination of both?
Lately, we've just been doing more of these historic locations. We all agree when we say like we would prefer to do private investigations. We do want to get out there and help people, but at the same time, we're still a relatively new team. It's, you know, we're trying to get our name out there, but we haven't had as many private investigations as we would prefer. So at the same time, while we're not having these private investigations, we'll go to these historic locations and sort of sharpen our skills, you know, to further develop things so that when the private investigation does come up, we're ready. We have techniques. We know what questions to ask. And we just keep on sharpening those skills in those historic places.
And speaking of skills, Jenny, you with your science background, we were talking a little bit ago about you were a skeptic and now you're investigating paranormal occurrences and you guys kind of giggled. Obviously, you have experienced some things. Can you kind of tell me some things that you couldn't explain, that you've encountered, you couldn't explain through science?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, I as a skeptic, I really think I tell people I'm your best friend, because if you show me something that I just can't explain no matter what I do, then we have something interesting. So if you're trying to prove a haunting, that can be beneficial, right? I have seen definitely things, and I wanted to get into the whole experimentation mentality that we have. I can tell you that we will literally work hours on new experiments in the field. Like, we really want to push it forward with our backgrounds. So Anthony in particular, and I will give him all praise for this, is kind of an inventor in that respect. Like, he, if we don't have the equipment, he'll make it. And he'll design it. He's always thinking of, you know, let's experiment with this or that. And he actually, I would love him to talk about we call it an EMPT box. And the reason I asked him to describe it is because it was one of my most favorite pieces of evidence. And it was actually at Kreischer Mansion. So maybe, Anthony, you could tell everybody what the box is about. And I would love to talk about the evidence that I got with it.
Sure, sure. So the box that I built is, like I said, called an EMPT box. It basically just stands for electromagnetic proximity and temperature. And what you have is an antenna that generates a static field around it, a very small static field of about maybe 1 to 3 inches. And once that static field is broken, you'll basically get an alarm. You'll have some beeps. You'll have some lights go off so that you know that that field is interrupted. In addition to that, there's a temperature probe on it that that'll obviously give you a temperature readout. It doesn't beep or anything like that, because I hate when you have pieces of equipment where everything beeps and then you don't know which thing is going off.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily consider it my most innovative piece of equipment, but what I did do with it, since it was one of the first pieces of equipment that I built, was I personalized it. A lot of equipment nowadays, I was just watching a TV show last night where someone laid out a bunch of equipment, and it looked like, how can I describe it? it didn't look personal. It looked like almost like this intimidating equipment that looks unapproachable. So when I built that box, I put it in a wooden box. I stained it. I put a nice finish on it. I made it look like something that anyone would want to go out there and touch. I wanted to make it look like something that everybody would be familiar with. Everyone's seen a wooden box. They don't have to be afraid of it. And we've found that just with that little bit of change in the aesthetic, we get more activity with that than we do with similar pieces of equipment.
Right. Right. And he's leading exactly into what I wanted to say. And that what we did is we actually put a crystal on top of the box that looks, it's very pretty, you know, and it's not a REM pod, something like that, that you would see everywhere. It looks like a jewel box, Carol, or a music box almost. And some of these places, like you mentioned, are from the 1800s mm-hmm. or 1700s. And that type of wooden box is going to be much more familiar or interesting to somebody, to a spirit that might want to check it out, right? So at Kreischer Mansion, we were trying to communicate with the lady of the house, Mrs. Kreischer, and we had that box on a mantle of a fireplace. And what I love about this box is the low degree of error with it. Like, you know, a REM pod, the temperature sets it off, everything, like Anthony said. I mean, it just beeps, beeps, beeps. But you literally have to touch this crystal for this box to go off. There's no other way. And we had that thing light up like the 4th of July. And I really think that it was because, you know, we don't think of it in terms of equipment. We think of it as how can we communicate with human beings? You know, not this spirit that we don't know how to define, or, you know, this entity, that word is used all the time. I don't like that word. I like the word, you know, people. These are people, you know, like you or me. And when you think of it that way, and Anthony designs equipment that way, we get better results.
I never thought of that approach to it, but that makes sense.
Exactly. Exactly. Whereas a red, you know, beeping light going off with an antenna might be a little bit intimidating, or at least at the very least, not very interesting or scary, God forbid. You know, right. We don't want to scare anybody either. Again, we always look at it as these are human beings with lives like ours.
So was
we're not talking to the wall.
Was that the investigation that made you become less of a skeptic? Do you still consider yourself skeptic?
I definitely consider myself a skeptic still. I will always go in thinking there are alternate reasons. One of the things we always say is we don't call it evidence. A lot of teams say, oh, here's our evidence. But we don't always say that. And Anthony can expound on that. But we say this is the data that we got. This is the phenomenon that we witnessed. But we don't necessarily call that evidence of a ghost or a spirit.
But it's what you can't explain.
Right. Because unless you're literally looking at an apparition right in front of you, you know, that noise you heard might be paranormal, but that doesn't mean it's a ghost.
Anthony, anything to add to that?
Yes. So I don't like using the word evidence. I like things like anomalies, observations, or even just footage. Because when you say evidence, especially in my world, or in my professional world, when you say evidence, you better have a very clear-cut case, you know? And with what we do, let's be honest, for the most part, there's a lot more that we don't know what we're dealing with. I like to be upfront about that because I can tell you, listen, something weird happened. I can't tell you what it is because I don't know, but this was anomalous. This was something that should not have happened, but it did. And you can take a situation, let's say, with a certain set of circumstances where something happens and it'll seem paranormal to you. It'll seem anomalous to you. But then through the eyes of like a physicist, like Jenny, who would say something like, oh no, given these conditions, this absolutely can happen. It might not be normal, but it can happen in these situations. So based on your knowledge, based on your experience, you can argue that something is maybe strange or it might be evidence, but someone else might be able to say, oh no, that can happen under these conditions. I don't know. I kind of went off on a little bit of a tangent there.
No. You're correct. That's definitely a fundamental part of our approach.
As a team, a lot of investigation teams, they frequent certain areas. I have some friends here locally who have a team, and they'll do a tour of a certain area of town. And it's interesting to me because you can go on the tour with them. You get history of the buildings and the locations. They tell you about things they've encountered there. Do you do anything like that with, you know, things that people can sign up and join you for?
Mm-hmm. So this is a great point for us to talk about the Ritz Theater. It's in New Jersey, in Southern New Jersey. We actually host investigations there. When we first investigated the theater, I think we were the first, if not the second. There may have been one team there before us years ago, but we were essentially the first team to investigate that place. And that's pretty rare in our field. I think we agree on that. It's a pretty rare thing with a historical building to be the first team to investigate it. So we were absolutely honored to do that. And since then, we've formed a relationship with the theater, and it's an active theater. And I can tell you it's a Greek Revival theater. It was started in 1927. Eventually fell into some ruin in the 70s and actually became an adult film theater. But at the time, in its heyday, it was a booming vaudeville theater, and now is once again a really important part of that community, a theater that shows plays and musicals and films. So it's been brought back to life, really. So we host investigations there for private teams and also for events. Like, we will bring in experts in our field to come to the theater and investigate with us and with other people who are interested in learning. So it's really almost educational and an investigation at the same time.
I personally have a theater background, and I know of several theaters that are haunted theaters. And it makes sense to me because people go in there as an entertainer. That's their life. That's who they are. That's what they love. They love being on stage. And I can see why older theaters like that have spirits that stick around. So if they're going to be haunting any place, it ain't going to be somebody's house. It'll be at a theater.
I think with theaters especially, there's so much emotional energy going into those places, not just from the performers, but from the audience members as well. You know, sure, you have the performer pouring themselves, their hearts out on stage. But at the same time, you have the audience members reacting to that. That could be, you know, hundreds, depending on the place, if not thousands of people, mm-hmm. who are basically putting out this energy that location is absorbing. It makes perfect sense as to why a theater would be, you know, would have some kind of haunting.
Right. And if you're a believer in objects holding energy, there are so many props there from endless shows that they've had there. And they're all stored in the basement. And it's my favorite. I love going down there and looking at all the props. You know, I'm not from a theater background, but oh, it's so great to see all those wonderful props.
Have you had any experience that happened to you in that theater that you found particularly interesting?
Because yes.
I'd like to hear this.
So many. So many.
Happy ever.
Can
Carol,
you share a couple?
Anthony, please go.
Okay, so I know that Jenny, you and I are thinking about one thing in particular.
Yes, we
I
are.
Will leave you that. I will leave you, I will let you have that one because I want to talk about my first experience there, which was just completely mind blowing. There's a rehearsal room inside the theater, and I was there with two other investigators, and I had a whole bunch of equipment set up. But I always feel like when I start an investigation, it's good to start with something simple. If you're trying to communicate with someone, I like to use either a pendulum or dowsing rods for whatever reason. I always get results with those pieces of equipment. So we were in there and we were starting to ask questions. While I was operating the pendulum, I also had a ghost box, a sweeping AM/FM radio in the background. And while I'm starting to get answers on the pendulum about whoever might be there, we started getting responses on the ghost box that coincided with the answers on the pendulum. Lots of interesting stuff came up. We found out that there was some sort of female that had resided in that area. And there was always this male entity that was sort of constantly overstepping her in the communication. And it actually became this really emotional thing, because this conversation had gone on for about 20 or 30 minutes, where I just kept getting clear responses on the ghost box that coincided with responses on the pendulum. And we were getting the same voices over and over again. And it was a full-on conversation where we had to actually tell this other male entity, like, hey, step back a little, let this lady speak. And it seemed like to me that she clearly wanted to say something. She was clearly looking for a connection. And now, whenever we go there, when we go to the rehearsal room, I always introduce myself to whoever's there. And then I like to ask, hey, we had a really good conversation a while back. Do you remember me? And there's usually a response where it's like, yes, I remember, or yes, I remember you. It was one of those things where it was just, usually with like these communications that we have, they're maybe 10 minutes, but this just kept going on and on. Like it was someone who was just wanted to be heard.
It had to have been fascinating for you.
Oh, no, absolutely. Because after a while, it just felt like a regular conversation. You know, there was a clear back and forth. Things were answered in context. And it was actually a little emotional, just because it felt like someone who wanted to connect with somebody finally got to connect with somebody and just say, hey, I'm here.
And Jenny, what about your experiences there?
Right. I mean, just to add a little bit to that, I mean, the advantage of being one of the first groups there is that really they get to know us. You know, any spirits who might be there get to know us, and we get to know them. And it's been a process, almost like making friends. I know that might seem a strange way to put it, but like Anthony said, now when he goes in there, you know, he's aware that there might be somebody trying to keep that woman from speaking. And we always say, hey, you'll get your turn, but we want to hear from her first. And so we kind of build a case. I hate to use, law enforcement terminology, but we kind of build a case with this place. And it's been an absolute joy to work there. And we just look forward to further investigations there. So one of the things that this is kind of a dream for me, we have physical activity there. Like the first night I was there, one of my water bottles was sitting on the floor and just flew over. And then we also have a room. It's just a room at the top of the stairs. It's a dressing room, and the door will open on its own. So that's a perfect experiment for me, because I'm thinking, oh no, it does not, and I'm going to show you, you know, kind of
hang
thing.
On, Jenny, I kind of glossed over the fact that it just opens, because it's a little more than just a door sitting on a hinge that slides open.
Right, it's a latch door that opens on its own, and we've seen it happen several times. We've actually witnessed it happen. We have it on camera, and so for somebody like me, I was like, oh, here we go. This is going to be the most fun to debunk kind of thing. You know, I've asked people who are involved in construction. We thought about humidity and temperature and everything else. And I mean, we've examined that door and tried every experiment to get it to open, and nothing, just nothing. We have no explanation for it. And yet we can say, hey, we want to leave. Can you open that door for us? And it'll unclick and then open.
Oh,
you know, yeah. So, I mean, the creepiest part, Carol, is you hear the clicking. You know, the first time it happened to me, I did something I never do, and Anthony can vouch for me. I jumped. I never get scared in these things. But I think I did. I screamed. I went up. Like, I screamed because I thought somebody was coming in, and we had that theater locked. Remember, this is, you know, our theater, quote, our theater now. So we are alone in that theater for hours and hours with the doors locked. So when that doorknob started to shake and it clicked open, I jumped. I admit it. I screamed. And since then, I've just racked my brains to try to explain it, and I have no explanation. And even recently, we brought someone in, a celebrity in, who had a background in construction. and he had nothing. He looked and looked as well. And he actually had it happen, which was amazing. It happened when he was there. And he was like, I got...
That's so validating too, because a lot of times you've experienced that, but it doesn't happen when anybody else is around, but it happened to you.
Exactly.
But it's like, look, you saw it too.
But Carol, you make a great point. One of the things that's so neat about this door is that it doesn't always happen. And he also pointed that out. He's like, if that thing opened every time, you know, 15 seconds after you close it, it opens, that's a different thing. But if you can go days or hours without it doing it, and then suddenly it does it, that's a little bit harder to explain. But trust me, the first time you're sitting right next to it and you hear that doorknob turning and no one's in the building.
It kind of gives me the creeps a little bit, but yep. I'm fascinated. It's one of those things. I'm terrified and fascinated all at the same time. I'm drawn to it and scared of it, but I don't know how I coincide those two, but somehow I love this whole kind of conversation.
You capture it perfectly. It's exhilarating, exciting, and terrifying at the same time.
All of it. If someone wanted to go on one of those tours with you at the theater, is that available? Can they go to your website?
Most definitely.
Okay.
Yes. And yes, we host teams, and we also have events. Like I said, we'll have an author or a sensitive or psychic, or again, like a celebrity come in. And we just want to bring in people with different backgrounds and points of view, because it is new. So we want to build this new history of investigating this theater and have as many people look at it as we can, because we welcome that. You know, if you're just doing what your team does and you don't really pay attention to other people, what are you really learning except what's right in front of you, right? So we want other opinions. We welcome other opinions.
And your website is parasiteinvestigations.com?
Right. And I think I've sent you that the link of all our socials as well. You can follow us on social media as well.
I know the Facebook Messenger, that's usually a good way to get in touch with us. We have our team email, but which is also a great way. But for whatever reason, it seems like now like Facebook Messenger is the way for everybody to communicate. And that's where we get a lot of our messages from.
And Parasite is para, P-A-R-A, but it's S-I-G-H-T, Parasite.
Correct.
So check them out. Send them a message on Facebook. I want to thank you so much for your time today. This was such an interesting conversation. I'm just like making a list of places I want to visit, but I want to go to this theater now with you guys.
You're certainly welcome. Certainly welcome to join us.
I would love it. And that wraps up our conversation with Jenny and Anthony from Parasite Investigations. If you'd like to access all of our episodes, including the archive and advanced episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. You can sign up on Apple Podcasts. You can try it 3 days, absolutely free. Or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. Get everything there, all ad free. For all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Carol Hughes, and thank you for listening.